Hello and welcome. Thank you all for having me this week. So I thought I'd like to start just with a sound check. Is this sounds good? I'm not sure if last can't hear me and tell me, and I'll see if I can adjust it anymore, but I think I got it all the way up. So anyways, I'm saying it sounds good. So I think many of you perhaps were at the board meeting, and so I'd like to shift gears. We let go of some of the business. Of course, I'm sure it's all divine business, you know, that what we're doing here at Awakening Together. But sometimes when we are in the business mode of life, we tend to have our consciousness at the forefront of our brain, like right up there in the forehead area. But for this evening, I'd invite you to start by seeing if you can bring your consciousness back deeper into the third eye, to a place of peace and a place of timelessness. Timelessness. The further we walk on the path, our relationship with time radically. And I'm sorry, but I get a little bit confused when a commercial comes on. Can everyone hear the commercial too, or is it just on mine? Okay, good. So I'll just keep talking then. Sometimes when I get on Pal Talk, a little commercial comes on, and I'm never sure if everyone can hear it or just me. So what I was speaking about was, for many of us, we spend our whole life in our minds. And if you feel where that is, it's very much at the front of the skull, right up where the forehead meets the brain. And you can even feel that. A lot of people, when they're feeling really stressed out, will get a headache right up in the forehead area of their brain. But the further we walk on the path, go a thought and to step back. Step back toward the center, step back into the third eye, you will begin to have more of a timeless, eternal experience of reality. And in a sense, Eckhart Tolle, he teaches from this place of the absolute now. Many people mistakenly think of the now as whatever it is that they are thinking about in this present moment. But if you step back into the third eye and allow your consciousness to fall back into the context of reality, what you begin to notice is this eternal sense of vastness, spaciousness, a depth of freedom that has no beginning and no end. And I invite you all to feel into this right now. to let go of your day, let go of the meetings, the work, the book, the seeking. Constant surfing the internet. Can you join me in just stepping back deep into the context of reality? And notice directly what you feel, what you experience. As yourself, we're not stepping back into some bizarre spiritual state. We are stepping back into that which we are. Have you ever noticed that there is an aspect of yourself, a very permanent aspect of yourself? Perhaps the only permanent thing about you. Which is always already here. Always already quiet. Always already free. Notice something here that is always awake, always aware. And again, the biggest mistake that I find that most of my students, most spiritual seekers make in regards to this perspective is when they look for awareness, they look right up in their thinking mind. They think they can think themselves into awareness. But awareness is the space in which thought is arising, the space in which your story arises, the space in which your life arises, the space in which emotion and sensation arises. Permanent of without this, we would not exist. And so I invite you all to step back into the center of your head, the center of your brain. To step back into the third eye. And what you begin to notice is this centerless center. The space that has no beginning and no end. No birth, no death. No time. No time. In fact, time becomes irrelevant. It's almost as if it does not exist. When we step into space, we immediately become silent. It's almost as if when you step deeply into this, there's no letting go necessary. order to let go, there has to be two. But when we step into this space, we realize there is only one. A one without a second. And Zen, the koan is, what was your face before your parents were born? The Buddha referred to this as our original nature. It's here whether we are 3, 10, 13, 26, 46, 86. This eternal presence. A space of absolute okayness. It's almost as if nothing ever happened. As if nothing ever happened. And so it's quite beautiful. Life becomes quite beautiful. Life becomes quite easy. If you ever find yourself suffering greatly, immeasurably, if you can access this space, you will immediately realize yourself as okay, completely okay. You will know that you have outlived everything. That there is nothing other than you. I have to be careful as a teacher for when I go into this place. Sometimes I can't come out of it. It's hard for me to talk about anything human. Seems like the last number of episodes, that's all I did was talk about our humanity and working with our heart. And to be honest, I was very confused. I had no idea what I was going to speak about this evening. And so as I sat down, I opened my heart, opened my mind. Say, God, you show me. You move through me. You live through me this evening. For I am feeling absolutely blank. And so I invite you to join me in the timeless presence of this one nature that we all are. One without a second. When we live in this place, we see God everywhere. We experience God everywhere. As the great, what the Tibetan Buddhists call the great Prajnaparamita. Which is the divine pregnant with all phenomena. Before anything has manifested. This absolute perfection, absolute divinity. Unborn and yet eternally pregnant. Pregnant with perfection. And so I'm going to see if I can step out of this and begin to speak in a more human way. down-to-earth way. And I invite all of you, if you have a question, you can raise your hand, take the mic, you can type one up. Up on the screen, if there's something to speak about. And otherwise, I'll speak of what's been going on. Well, in my world, okay, beautiful. So thank you for the question. Craig, do you feel that spiritual practice or sadhana is necessary for awakening? That's a great question. And so, of course, there's two different approaches. Japan. And so the question is, well, which is correct? Which is correct? Is it necessary to practice sadhana for spiritual awakening? One of the things I like to do is refer to history. You look at all the great teachers of the world. Did they practice? It appears so. Now, of course, there's a few individuals who didn't practice much, if at all. You know, there's teachers like Eckhart Tolle. He didn't practice. He seems like he just woke up. But how many Eckhart Tolles are there? Ramana Maharshi, when he was about 14 years old, he laid down. Basically asked himself a couple questions about who he was, imagined his own death, and he woke up. I can even imagine when I was 14 years old, I spontaneously began having awakening experiences. It was really fun. I'd sit down and stare at my ceiling and feel myself dissolve into the hugeness of the universe. It's quite wonderful. Quite wonderful. But by the time I was 16 and had my first serious girlfriend, I realized what a broken heart was. And I could sit there and meditate all evening. And one of the things that I realized while I was sitting in meditation, the human mind is crazy. The human mind is absolutely crazy. So yes, can we wake up with no practice? Absolutely. Can we stay awake with no practice? Probably not. Probably not. The big reason is because we are born as absolute divinity. We are already completely perfect in your divinity. This divinity is awake, it's alive, it's vibrant, it's vast, it's free, it's powerful, it's vast, it's spacious, it's clear, it knows the truth. That is a given. But the great paradox about being a human being is that we were born into evolutionary bodies. In an evolutionary world. And so to sustain the awakening, within the context of your humanity and within the context of your human life, you must practice. You must learn to love. You must discover this peace that you are in your absolute divinity, in your human nature, in your human form. And this takes work. That we can work on this from our... You've never been to a psychologist before. And you talked about your life. And they kind of sat there reserved, and perhaps they had a little clipboard, took notes about you. And they're busy thinking, oh, I wonder what this poor fool has. I'm going to diagnose him or her. Generalized anxiety disorder, depression, bipolar disorder. I'm going to tell him to take these pills and do these exercises. That's kind of an ego working with an ego. Well, the path becomes silly. It becomes confusing. It becomes complicated. But when we wake up to the absolute divinity of our heart and practice from this perspective, it seems only normal to love yourself. Only normal to heal the ego. Only normal. Go into all these aspects of our which are struggling. Which are struggling. And so just as we did this evening, we can start off perhaps with a business mind. You know, a mind that's doing this thing or that thing or thinking about this or that or thinking about our life or how to make more money, how to buy a retreat center, how to fundraise, this thing or that thing. And then immediately we can let go of that and step back. Step back into the third eye, step back into the centerless center. We can get in touch with awareness and turn awareness upon itself. And immediately your life seems to vanish. We step into the eternal timeless state. And it seems as if there is not a problem at all. No problem. And you're welcome to stay in this state as long as you like. But let's imagine we live in Florida right now. And we hear the wind and the rain start knocking at our window. And we turn on the news to see the weather. We see that a hurricane is coming to our town the next 25 minutes. Your mind problem, your ego will arise, and it will tell you how to protect yourself. It'll probably go into fight or flight. And some individuals can have that experience. Well, I had a student once, and she lived through Katrina, Hurricane Katrina. And her mind never left. Never left the fight or flight mode. So three or four years, but still fight or flight mode. And so does she need to learn to practice? Yes. But the question is what are we practicing? Oh my God, we better be practicing love. We better be practicing getting in touch with the direct experience of our true nature. When we get in touch with the direct experience of our true nature, that fight or flight response, that PTSD response, it gets rewired. And then we are able to rest as our true nature. But not many of us can just step into awareness and stay there forever. To do so, we have to give birth into heaven, not onto planet Earth. Planet Earth is an evolutionary world. So yes, of course, we practice. But a good question is where are we practicing from? Many teachers like Muji speak about not practicing, letting go of seeking. But when he says don't practice, basically he's really talking about letting go of practicing from a place of anxiety, from a place of greed, from a place of trying to get somewhere or something. You know, I spent a good 14 years meditating intensely, trying to get somewhere. Trying to get somewhere. But at some point, God made my life so hard, gave me so much hell, that I fell on the ground and broke to pieces. And within that breaking to pieces, I realized there was one thing here to operate. My connection with God. When I realized what that connection was, I realized that who and what I am, who and what I was, is vast, spacious peace, vast, spacious love, that I was being eternally held all along. And yet I was doing a million things, trying to control life from a place of mind, from a place of ego, from that place that I was speaking about at the beginning, the forefront of our consciousness, where we are trying to control, trying to do, trying to control life, trying to do God from the perspective of ego instead of being God from the perspective of our heart. Radically different way to live is being God. So that's what we are. That's what we are. And so, yes, that's a cool question. Do I practice? Absolutely. Every single day. Start off my day with an hour of meditation. Absolutely. Meditation is like a breath of fresh air. It's not a chore. It's a time when I give myself permission just to let go into God, not to worry about anyone else, not have to do anything, let go of any to-do list, but just to let go fully into the divine and be absolutely nourished. Absolutely nourished. I think in this world, most of us, we get covered up with a lot of heaviness, a lot of weight, a lot of pain and suffering. And so the practice of meditation is a practice just to empty all of that out, to let go, to connect It's the time to connect with the greatest force of love in the universe, love itself, God herself, in us, as us, without having to think a single thought. I love practice, but I never practice from a place of anxiety, a place of trying to get. Tell some even practice for my students because they don't practice. Some of them don't practice. I feel their weight of pain on me. I can feel the weight of pain of many of them on me. It's interesting, I was telling this the other day, the more just coming on me, I said, what is this? I have nothing to worry about. My life is really good. And then I get to my office and I find, oh, there's a student there waiting for me. And he's having a panic attack. I was feeling his pain, helping him with his work. Oneness means oneness. We feel everything. We're connected with everything. I know I say this a lot, but we're connected. The hugeness and bliss and vastness of the universe, we're also connected with the pain and suffering of all those around us. Now, some individuals can choose not to feel and to have very firm boundaries with others. But I'm a person who's open. It's hard for me not to be open. And so I feel intensely what the people around me are going through, what's arising on planet Earth. In fact, now might be a nice time for all of us to connect with our hearts. To feel the depth of love that you are. And someone might ask, well, how do we do that? How do we feel the depth of love that we are? Well, everything is always about our direct experience. Can you directly experience your heart right now in this moment? And as you notice, it feels a little bit different than the experience in the third eye. The third eye almost feels like stepping back into a deep well. Eternal darkness, eternal emptiness, eternal freedom. But in this moment, I'm inviting us to come into our heart and feel a depth of love, a depth of radiance. For some of you, it will be a lightheartedness, a brilliance, a light. And I encourage you to feel this radiance. And if it's not already, invite this radiance to spread throughout your body, spread throughout your being, blessing your humanity. So first we get in touch with our divinity, we get in touch with our heart nature, and we allow this heart nature to spread out, we allow it to wake up throughout our form. This is one of the practices that I do if I feel any deadness in my body, if there's any aspect of my body that does not feel Satchitananda. If it feels numb or dead or heavy or anxious, I descend into the heart, get in touch with the beauty and divinity and the radiance of the heart, and allow this radiance to spread out, to wake up in the belly, the throat, the head, the shoulders, the arms, the hands, the back, the spine, pelvis, the thighs, the calves, the shins, the feet. We allow this radiance to wake up everywhere. And notice, oh wow, that's a different type of awakening. That's a different type of direct experience. The nun of the third eye. And so as we feel into this space of love that we are, the space of radiance, space of aliveness, we notice that what we are is quite amazing, quite beautiful. Profoundly brilliant. And so a great question is what is spiritual awakening? Is spiritual awakening just about going into the timeless now? Is it about only going into the heart? How about going into both? There are many different ways we can wake up and experience the fullness of our nature. Many different ways we can wake up and experience the fullness, the hugeness of our nature. So is practice necessary? Well, I like to think of practice as exploration. It's one of the gifts my teacher gave to me. And we explored countless worlds together. Countless. He wasn't a teacher that just said, just wake up and then, you know, go back to what you were doing. He said, let's wake up in every aspect of ourselves. And the gift of having a human body, the gift of having seven chakras, the seven major chakras is, hell, probably 10 million minor chakras. If we can wake up in each of those different centers, and as we do so, we discover different aspects of divinity, different aspects of awakening. As Jesus said, my Father's house had many mansions. Many mansions. Our Father's house is our house. There's many worlds and realms to wake up into. And the more you stay with your direct experience, the more you open, the more you adopt this attitude of being an endless explorer, not an endless seeker who's anxious and wanting and desiring and needing, but like an explorer, an adventurer. Hell, if the universe is infinite, if awakening is infinite, I'm going to get bored with the timeless now pretty quickly. Wake up to it. Experience it, hey, for a couple of years, you're like, okay, I got it. This is beautiful. What else is there? And it doesn't come from a place of anxiety or neediness. It comes from a place of being an explorer. And I was speaking with Ajashanti about this. And I asked him, in your experience, is there an end? Said, absolutely not. It keeps revealing itself to me in deeper and deeper and more fuller ways. The Buddha often spoke of this word beginner's mind, that willingness to eternally be an explorer, eternally be an adventurer. When I was quite young, I used to go out on a summer night in Ohio. He lived way out in the country. I would just lay out there in the driveway. And I would close my eyes. And I would feel the warm pavement, you know, below my skull, below my spine. And I would give myself permission to merge into the earth. I would feel warm, I would feel held, feel radiant and alive. And then I would open my eyes and see before me the vastness of the universe. This is back before there were so many people where I lived in Ohio. There was no light pollution. I would just sit there in awe. Never was there a thought that I would figure out the universe. But what I did instead was directly experience the universe. The hugeness of the night sky. I would experience it. Along with the embrace, the warmth, the aliveness, the radiance of the earth herself holding me. Me merging into her. While simultaneously merging into the hugeness of the sky. It's through this way that we begin to know the earth. We begin to know the universe. It takes someone who is greatly humble to let go in this way. It's funny, I can remember I went to college, and at one point I took an astronomy class and was so excited to learn about the hugeness of the universe. To study how the stars were formed. How big the universe was. And probably since I've been to college, the universe has like grown either 10 or 20 times, maybe 100 times. Because the physicists keep figuring out and the astronomers keep figuring out it's bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. But I can remember my teacher. He had such awe. He had such a childlike nature toward the universe. About how huge it was and this and that. But he had this other aspect of himself where he was trying to figure it out. And so he would dance back and forth between living in this absolute awe and then being in his scientific mind, a mind that wanted to figure, wanted to condense, wanted to know everything. And I could remember the day when someone asked, you know, if he thought that there was other life in the universe. And I noticed his heart closed immediately. And he said, absolutely not. Human beings are the only life in this universe. And I just watched his nature shrink. I watched him limit himself. I watched him go from having a childlike innocence to being tight and tense and constricted. He went on to make this long argument from his head about how we are the only life form, that Earth is an anomaly. And we all do this. We all open up when we come to such a thing as a satsang. And then when we walk into work Monday morning, we bring our consciousness up to the front of our forehead and get into business mode and say, I don't have time for any of that right now. I need to get to work. I need to figure life out. I need to do this thing or that thing. Most of us make this amateur mistake and do not realize that our life is much more efficient and runs much more smoothly if we allow God to live through us. If we allow God to think through us. If we allow God to act through us. There is this greater intelligence available to all of us. And the question is, are we open? Are we open to this intelligence? Are we open? Do we have the courage to listen? Do we have the humility to let go of our mind, to come into our hearts? Do we have the courage to put down our agendas and open to a greater agenda, a greater divinity, a greater intelligence? A big part of spiritual practice is learning how to listen to something greater than your own mind. And so we have about 10 minutes left this evening. Does anyone else have a question? Or a comment, a correction? And so one of the things we can do, and you're welcome to post one if something comes to mind. But one of the things I'd invite us to do is before we end this evening, so I invite you to join me again in connecting with your direct experience. Hopefully you haven't left that experience. If you feel into your heart, if you simultaneously feel into the third eye, if you feel that timeless state, the state that everything is okay in a transcendent way. Again, we're just getting in touch with this. We're acknowledging that this is always already here. This transcendent space is always already here. It's spacious, it's vast. Incredible freedom is right here. As long as we don't pick up any thoughts, I think we need to think about anything. Because this is the willingness to let go of all thought. To feel how huge your consciousness is. And how it's absolutely okay. Absolutely. There's an okayness in a sense, like a transcendent okayness. So we are acknowledging that as our nature. Simultaneously, we're acknowledging the radiance of our heart. The radiance of our aliveness. And again, we are directly experiencing this radiance, not simply in our heart, and of our chest, the fullness of our belly, in our arms, our hands, our legs, our feet. We're feeling this radiance everywhere. And so from this place, we are absolutely resting here, allowing this body, this form of ours, to be nourished, to be healed, to be loved. So we're stepping into this place. Absolute divinity. And I want you to notice, is there any aspect of your humanity which needs some love, which needs some peace? And so we're inviting that forward. We are inviting any aspect of our evolutionary body to be held, to be embraced, to be picked up just like a crying child. We are loving that aspect of ourself. We're holding it. We're breathing into it. We are saying, I see you. I love you. I'm here for you. I acknowledge your pain. I acknowledge your struggle. I acknowledge your heartache, your anger, your hurt. And my response to you is love. Unconditional love. We're breathing love into our pain, love into our humanity. Love into the child within. And we're breathing here. We're holding this space as long as it takes. We're being eternally patient with ourselves. Eternally patient with ourselves. One of the greatest gifts of true spiritual awakening is absolute patience with our humanity and the humanity of others. Absolute patience with the cause and conditions of this planet. We're taking deep and full belly breaths into whatever it is that we are struggling with. We feel absolutely perfect. We can breathe into someone else's life, perhaps some friends or family. And even this evening, while so many of our brothers and sisters in Texas are struggling and Florida are struggling with hurricanes, we can see this stream of love going to them. And of course, we don't have to stop there. We can see this stream of love going to those stricken with famine, Sudan and Somalia, we can see this stream of love headed to Syria and Iraq and Afghanistan. We can see this stream of love going to the countless mothers in this moment holding a crying child. We can see it going to individuals struggling with addiction, heartache or anger. We can see this love going into our planet and healing her wounds, healing humanity's wounds. So much pain on this planet. And so from this place of humility, we call upon God to shine her light down through us to all those struggling, all those afflicted. May this world wake up to the truth of its nature. May all of humanity wake up to its absolute divinity. May all of us live from our highest. May our world be blessed and filled with love and light, peace, and absolute unity. In your name, Lord, we pray. May peace be with you all. Thank you all for joining me again this evening. As always, I feel deeply honored, and it's my absolute pleasure. Amen. Yes, of course. May peace be with you all. Again, thank you. Thank you all for having me. Peace be with you.